What's up, guys? Welcome to the Wolf of York Street podcast. I've got Mr. Laz in the house, Lazarus himself.
Nice to be with you again, my man. Nice to be on here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. This guest is special, guys. Lazarus is an upcoming hip-hop artist out here, and he's doing a big thing, guys. I'm excited for you guys to hear it. Yeah, so welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, man. It's been a long time coming.
Shake my hand, sir. Shake my hand. Good to have you on the show. So where I think I'll get started is you've had a great journey, and I want people to get to know your origin story a little bit. So could you tell me a little bit about your background, where you're from?
So I come from originally a Sudanese family background, but I was born in Parliament, Uganda, refugee camp in 90. And I came to Canada when I think I was about like 6 or 7. So I grew up in Hoima. I was born in the refugee camp, and then we moved to the capital city, Kampala.
Yeah.
And we lived around in the Natero area in Kampala. We lived there for a little bit. My dad came to Canada as a student, and he was working on the visa process to sponsor my mom and myself to Canada. So I came to Canada by the time I was 6. And when I came to Canada, I could speak like 4 different languages.
Damn.
I could speak English, Luganda, I think Arabic is the other one, and then my native language. But when I came to Canada, like all those other languages kind of ran out of space. I just was inundated in English.
What was it like, I'm sure you were aware. So what was that like? And what happened in your country, by the way?
Oh, definitely. So like what led us to the refugee camp? So it was a civil war at that time that was happening in Sudan. It was a civil war that came up in the south, and that's what led a lot of Sudanese people to neighboring countries like Uganda and Kenya.
Mm.
My dad had already actually been in Uganda because he was born in Uganda originally.
Right.
Because his dad migrated to Uganda, so he's a Ugandan city.
Right.
So that's kind of like the background of my story and my family. So my life in Hoima, it was a very interesting life, like, especially in the refugee camp. You didn't have like running water or anything. Like you didn't take showers at home. There was actually like, I don't want to say a well, but there was like a water pump.
Yeah.
And people would take showers by the water pump. We had like one TV, and it was a black and white TV.
Yeah.
It's just one TV that the whole neighborhood would go to see and watch like children's shows or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I think there was like 2 radios or whatever in the town that people would use for entertainment. But as far as more entertainment than that, that was the only means of entertainment we had. We have the radios, and we have the black and white TV. Other than that, like the fun things we used to do was we used to ride bikes. We used to like make songs with each other, and like if someone like did something that was like embarrassing or whatever, like they would make a song about that person.
That's wild.
And the whole neighborhood would sing it. Yeah, I remember one story. One time when my mom was taking, I was like 4. And my mom was taking, like, I was taking a shower with my mom in front of the pump. And obviously I was naked, right? My mom was washing my body. And then I just remember my friends riding up bikes and seeing me getting off of their bikes and making a song about me being naked.
Oh, absolutely crazy.
So yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, life was a simple life. I'm proud of where I come from. I'm super proud of being African and just growing up and being born there. It's a big part of my identity, for sure.
I fully appreciate what you just said about like the refugee camp, and also, just the joys of like childhood in Africa and Nigeria. I was born in Nigeria, and it's crazy. Some of the little things that people derive joy from,
right.
It's just like, exactly. Like to be able to find happiness like that, even in a refugee situation, wild. But Maybe we'll stay on the refugee or growing up in a refugee camp a little bit, because obviously we're in a world now where there's a lot of war, and there's for sure a refugee crisis everywhere in the world. And what is as a person growing up as a kid and under those kind of circumstances? Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of described a little bit of it, but I'd like to know maybe a bit more just to help people. Maybe understand and maybe associate with the refugee perspective a little bit, right?
like more so about like what life is like
in
absolutely. I mean, again, I'm trying to gather as much memories as I can because it was the time when I was very young.
Yeah.
But to, I guess to go even more in depth about it, like food wasn't necessary, so that was always there.
Yeah.
You were relying on the UI to do like food rations and things like that. Now, where we lived in, it wasn't as bad as like, it was called a refugee camp, but it wasn't like, you know, like what you see now in the news in terms of like temporary structures or whatever. We did have like proper, well, I don't want to say proper houses, but we did have structures that we lived in.
Yeah.
So we had a roof over our head. It wasn't like we were living in a tent or anything, and we had beds. We had mattresses. I was sleeping on the floor on a mattress. So that's kind of the experience that we had. And we didn't, food wasn't really plentiful. I was so skinny. I remember nowadays, like people grew up in the same refugee camp as me, like my uncles and aunties and adults and such. When they see me, they can't even believe I look like this. I remember a time where I was like super thin, like really skinny.
Yeah.
But yeah, beyond that, like just other aspects of daily life, as I mentioned, it's like for me, because that was part of my adolescence, right? When I was a child, I just remember positive and fun things like riding my bikes with my friends. Specifically, that was my favorite pastime to do. I remember one time, actually, someone broke my bike.
Oh,
and my grandmother was so upset. She threatened to beat up the person who broke my bike for the whole neighborhood.
Like, gangster grandma, you go, go.
Yeah. And, you know, the funniest thing is at that time when we were living in the refugee camp, my dad was already in Canada as a student. And I remember this one vivid story I have to say is there was one time I was talking to my dad on the phone, right? And then my dad was like, where do you know where I am right now? And I said, you live in the phone. Because the only time I ever talked to my dad was on the telephone, right?
Yeah.
So in my mind as a child, I thought that my dad lived in the phone.
Yeah.
So when I came to Canada and I saw my dad for the first time,
yeah,
I was like, no, you're not my dad. My dad lives in the phone. Like, I didn't believe that he was my dad because in my mind as a child, right, I was thinking that my dad actually lived in the phone. Wow. And I could only talk to him on the phone. So I guess that's kind of more of the dynamics that show you there. Some of the more, let me say, I'm struggling, like some of the more negative things, if you want to go into that, was there was a lot of fights that happened at the refugee camps as well, too.
Right.
You know, people just, you know, human nature, people fighting over food, over whatever, rumors, dating, like all anything that you see in common society was also referring there. There was theft. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily always safe. There was definitely violence. My mom even got into a fight once and it got bloody. Wow. So I remember witnessing that and being very scared and terrified. And I just remember also, like, you know, people from the UN coming and interviewing people.
Interesting. Okay. So moving along now to your transition to Canada.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Culture shock, definitely. When I came to Canada, everything was, I knew white people existed, but I wasn't around white people as much, right? So coming to Canada, going from an environment where everybody is just black and looks like you, and then going to an environment where you now are like the outsider was definitely shocking. It was not easy to adjust. And you know, you deal with things like racism and stuff that you never experienced before, because you're just used to being accepted. Because you look like everyone else, right? So it was definitely something that was traumatizing at first to get assimilated to that. Like, I remember being called the N-word for the first time in my life when I was here. And that was also a pretty traumatizing experience. I remember just teachers not really understanding where you've come from or not understanding what life really like. Is like in Africa, like people making jokes like, oh, did you ride a lion to school? You know, like just stupid jokes like that.
Yeah.
Because people didn't really know what life was like in Africa, or they would ask you like, were you born in the jungle?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So, you know, you have to explain to someone that I was born in the hospital. We have hospitals too. In Africa, we have paved roads too. In Africa, we have cars, we have planes. I remember my grade three teacher, when I was talking about how we came to Canada, he literally asked me, he's like, did you come on a boat?
Ooh.
So I was like, no, we came on a plane. We have
that is plane. Borderline, bro. That is borderline.
Yeah, I remember experiencing that gap. So, you know, it was definitely not easy coming up in British Columbia. Yes, you know, there wasn't really that much. We had a community, but it wasn't as massive as some of the other communities here. I do now see more Africans coming to this province, and you know, our population is kind of going up a little bit. But back then, especially in like the 2000s,
sure. So we can then kind of where I think I'm interested now. At what point in this experience did you find music?
Yeah, I've always been interested in music. I remember even back in Uganda, I used to dance to like Congolese music all the time, like Kopi, Olumide, Olido, Mungomba. I used to dance to those songs all the time, and I would play them on repeat. When I came to Canada, right, you know, I was looking for something to associate my identity with because I felt so disconnected from my culture because, you know, I just randomly moved from one place to another place, and I was trying to find myself and find where I could fit in.
Right.
So I think it started with me just writing poetry. I got really into writing poetry. Then I got really into, I got really into Michael Jackson and like pop music and things like that. So I would write like my own renditions of like Michael Jackson songs. I think by that time I was 9. And then when I was 10, that's when I discovered the College Dropout by Kanye West. And that's when I got really into just writing rap music. You know, I didn't even know that it was rap music. I just thought I was writing poetry, like I was writing rhymes and just like singing or rapping along to songs that I heard on the radio. And I just remember my cousins coming over to our house, and we would like have, I don't know if you guys remember MTV, like we would play MTV music videos all day long. Yeah. Fast forwarding the story a little bit. When I got into high school, that's when I really started. Yeah, I remember in grade 8, I really started taking hip hop music a lot more seriously. I remember doing like rap battles and freestyle sessions during lunch breaks and such. And it just started to progress. So when I first started, I used to just record like voice notes on my cell phone of like raps that would come to my mind. Then I invested into buying like a Blue Yeti speaker back in those days, and I downloaded Audacity on my laptop. And what I used to do was I used to take like, you know, those YouTube type beats on YouTube, and I used to just like rap, just like make those freestyles and those songs at the time. And I got so interested in it. I had a media arts teacher by the name of Mr. Choi, and I kept showing him my song, and he was like, hey, you know, Vancouver Art Institute is doing a program for music and sound engineering, right?
Right.
So he said it was like a spring break program. It was 1 week. And he said that he could offer a student a free pass into that program.
Yeah.
And he offered it to me. So I got the opportunity to go to Vancouver Art Institute. I got the opportunity to learn how to use Logic and how to use the Apple loops and to make beats and things like that. So the funny thing is, what we didn't know was that the entire program was actually also a competition, because at the end, they were going to pick someone to win a scholarship. Yeah. And I won the scholarship in the music, in the music category.
I won that competition, and it really motivated me to just keep pursuing what I was pursuing. And I learned a little bit about beat making, mixing and mastering and everything. And that's what really thrusted me into what I'm doing today.
So what was the first song that you recorded?
First song.
Like maybe not professional, but what was your first, I don't know if you remember your first like really like, okay, these are lyrics I'm spitting here.
Yeah. Oh, actually it's actually glad you asked that. So on the train of like, on the train of thought that I was in when I was in the Vancouver Art Institute, one thing I really wanted to do, and I think one thing that really assisted me in winning the scholarship, was I was very eager and I was asking a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to learn how to do this. And one of the things I was really wanting to do there was just show my rapping abilities to some of the instructors.
Right.
So my my first song that I will count as the, you know, what you were saying, like I was really spitting, was actually when I was in the Vancouver Art Institute.
Yeah.
I remember talking to an instructor and being like, hey, I've never really recorded on a professional mic before. can I record on one of your mics? And so he actually, I forget what mic it was, but it was like a $10,000 mic, right? And I was so excited because it was my first time recording on a mic of that caliber. So we made a beat together and then he put me in the studio to record. And then I just did like I think it was like an 8-minute freestyle.
Yeah.
And then we called it The Beast is what we labeled it as, but yeah, it was just like a freestyle. It really sucks compared to what I've made nowadays. But at that time I was so hyped off of it because I was just freestyling off of like things that were like happening during that program. And he was really impressed by that too. And he gave me his business card. I never reconnected with him after that.
Yeah,
but that is what I would count as like my first song that really showed me that, hey, you know, I might have a talent here, right, and I can like harness this and keep pursuing it.
So how would you describe your style? And I'm trying to get, like, if you could like compare your style to an artist that people will recognize, who would you say your most,
person is very similar? I feel like my style is like a blend of Kanye West and Jay-Z and a little bit of Kid Cudi, because I try to incorporate some melodic elements to it, but my writing style is very similar to Jay-Z because that was one of my favorite artists growing up. And I also like to be experimental as Kanye West, particularly like the Yeezus era of Kanye West.
Yeah. Oh, fun. If you were kind of tell me one of songs that you have out at the moment,
mm-hmm,
if you could tell me the one that most represents your unique style, which one would? So I'm definitely asking you to pick your favorite child here, in case that wasn't clear about that. but really, if you could pick one of your songs that most clearly defines your style, which one?
I would probably have to say Astronaut, because we also have like an electric guitar solo at the end of that song,
right?
And I think that, so you know, it has my rapping side to it as well, but I think it also demonstrates my willingness to really experiment with other elements that might be outside of the hip-hop genre. So I think the song Astronaut is probably the best song that exemplifies what I'm trying to say.
Right. I mean that you've got, like, I listened to your catalog obviously for this interview, and
yeah,
listen, one of, I would say my favorite is probably Identity Crisis, just right, because yeah, I like the melody of it. Yeah. And then the way you kind of just like lead the lines out, I'm just like, yeah, buddy.
Shout out to Maya Jade, by the way. She did a phenomenal job on the hook. She's one of my close friends, but yeah, she did a good job on that song too.
Yeah, for sure. So what's your process? Like when you make music, like how does it start? You know, so a lot of artists would be like, you know what? I had this melody stuck in my head and then words just flowed out when I sat down. And you know, I'm curious about what your process is.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm going to do my best to answer this in like as concisely as I can. I guess for obviously it all has to start with like the inspiration, right? For me, it just, I don't know how else to say it. It's just like the, whatever mood that I'm in dictates the direction that I want to go to. I guess that's obvious, but you know, like if I'm feeling upset, if I'm feeling angry, if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling happy, I'm like, I want to express this feeling somehow. How can I get this out of my mind and into the world?
Yeah.
And that's where I start my process, right? And then from there, I can decide, you know, the type of melody that I want in the song, the type of structure that I want in the song. If it's a song that I want to have like a typical 18 bar, eight hook structure, or do I want to have it more condensed because this is just an idea that I want to get out quickly. So I think about those things first before I even start writing. And then once I start writing and attacking the song, the things that come to my mind is I try to have like a theme throughout the entire song. Like I try to start with the hook because I want the verses to be centered around whatever message I have in the hook, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I start with the hook. I start with trying to get like a catchy hook, something that I know that people will repeat in their heads. They'll be stuck in their heads. And then once I feel like I have a good hook down, I look at the content that I wrote in the hook, and then I like extrapolate that into the verses on the song. I hope that makes sense.
Oh yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, what would you say is the most important part of a song. Like, you want if you're making a hit jam,
right?
I mean, you mentioned the hook there,
yeah.
But a lot of artists will focus on the beat as well. You know, the beat has to be really banging. So, in your mind, what would you say? I'm trying to create a smash hit.
Right.
What is the most important element in there?
The most important element, definitely. I would say the beat and the hook, definitely.
He just picked the two options I gave you.
Okay,
but it's reality, though. Yeah. I think that's what I think that's the most important part of the song is the beat and the hook, because that's what people remember the most. Whenever you hear someone saying, "Oh, I love this song," they're usually like, I love the beat, or the hook is so catchy, right?
Okay.
Those are the strongest elements of a song, in my opinion. And I think that as long as you have those two elements down, like as long as if the beat is something that can get people dancing and moving,
right,
and it's something that's rhythmic, which I'm trying to move towards right now. And if the hook is something that's simplistic that can be stuck in someone's head, then you have a hit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
So based on that, I'm curious, you know, I personally, I would say I grew up on rap.
Yeah.
You know, listen to Nas, listen to Jay-Z, Kanye, like you did.
Yep.
And I am absolutely annoyed with where rap is right now. I'm not going to lie to you. The way rap has evolved, I find it doesn't retain the fidelity of what rap was.
Right.
And also, I just find that it doesn't require as much creativity. I find,
right,
in my mind, I feel like actual rappers, are an endangered species now. So for me, it's just like, what, if you're looking at the landscape right now, what is, who would you say best typifies like rap?
You know, for me, it's like a constant struggle, because it's like I go between both thought processes. Like, sometimes I feel like you, but other times I do feel like hip hop is very much so alive. When it comes to like the current landscape of things, I think that there is good music out there that is traditional to its core, that is popular as well. Some artists in my that come to my mind would be JID. Like, if you look at the way that he writes his bars, the flows he uses, he's using that triplet flow that got very popular in the 90s, and it's kind of making a comeback now. Joey Badass and the Pro Era crew, him and Capital C's and just their whole organization,
yeah,
definitely are also people who kind of stick true to the hip hop core identities and principles. And you know, the obvious ones would be Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole, and those guys have been in the game for a while now. I think what's happening right now is something that has also happened in previous eras of hip hop, is you have the soul food music, like the core elements of hip hop, but then what's kind of projected on the mainstream and what people see most often is like the trap music, the materialistic music. I remember in the early 2000s, what we had, like the bling bling era, you know, or like the ringtone music era, you know, like a Soulja Boy kissed me through the phone. Everyone remembers that time period.
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of what we're seeing now, is kind of that version of this. But once this decade passes, I do think the music people will remember at the forefront of their minds will be the Kendrick Lamars and the J. Cole's of the world. So I do think that hip hop is alive in the sense of there's a space for it, and it exists, and there's a fan base for it, and people are craving it. However, what is being promoted right now is sort of the music that is more so just about having fun and, you know, enjoying a good time, and it's materialistic. And yeah, so with that being said, I do think one of the other reasons why we're seeing that more often now versus the other types of music, I think there's two main reasons. One is, as you mentioned, the overall genre has just become heavily diluted, because anyone can become a rapper really now. Everyone has like a home studio, anyone can record and release things. So because the accessibility has increased, the overall quality has decreased, right? Because anyone can release something and just put it on Spotify nowadays. Also, another reason why I think we're seeing more of the trap music instead of, like, I guess you would say the core hard-hitting hip-hop type of music nowadays, is just because it's easier and quicker to make, right?
Right.
And so you can produce that more quicker, and you can spread it out easier. And it takes a while to actually craft a verse, right? You have to sit down and spend some time on making a good piece of art, a good piece of music. It takes time to do that. So I think those are kind of the two reasons why we're seeing what we're seeing now. And it can feel like at times that hip hop is dead, but I still think it's very much so alive. And there's a lot of people out there who are looking for like the next best thing.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously I'd like to kind of you to maybe put me at a point here. At what point would you say you are in your career at the moment?
Mm-hmm. I think right now I am at a, what's the best word? I'm at a crossroads right now, right? Because I've been doing it for quite some time now and I've released my first EP. And right now I want to actually release my first album, but I'm just trying to consider what is the best way to go about it in terms of getting the as maximum of a reach as possible. So one of the decisions that I've decided to make was to move out east and relocate to Toronto just to have access to a bigger market, and not just a bigger market in the sense of Toronto, but a bigger market in the sense of like, I'll be in Toronto, but I'll also have access to places like Chicago and New York, and I'll be able to just drive out there and do shows there and, you know, spread my name around those markets that might have more of an affinity towards the type of hip hop music that I make.
Right.
So that's kind of the point in my career where I think I am right now, is I'm at the crossroads, and I've made the decision to take this risk and relocate somewhere else and try my luck there.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd like for you to create a map for me. Like,
right.
How does and obviously you're at this point in your career, right? What are the steps a person needs to do to take to go from being a talented person to, in your mind, to become like, you know, a superstar?
Become a superstar, right? You know, like talent definitely is, having talent is, I think what people say, like hard work trumps talent if talent doesn't work at all. So I think an aspect of what people need to consider when they're like, I want to be an artist, is you have to figure out the identity and the branding of who you are as an artist. Meaning like what are you making music for? Who are you making music for? And how do you want to present yourself in the world? Right.
Right.
And I think if you have those elements figured out, and if you stay tight within those elements, people will see you as a professional because they're seeing something that's very curated with what you're presenting to the world. And I think that's an aspect that's often forgotten when people talk about these things, because you are correct. Like, you can't just say, oh, I have talent, I'm just going to blow up. It does have to be very intentional in terms of how you're presenting the music, you know, like, and that goes down to like the way that you dress, the way that your socials look in terms of like Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever other social media platform you use, and the quality of your music. You can't just be recording, because there's so many people who are super talented, right? But they're recording on like a $10 mic or whatever, right? So like the quality of your music matters. You have to have, because it's very competitive. There's a lot of people in the world who are making music. So the quality of your music matters heavily. Invest in getting some professional studio recording. Invest in getting professional mixing and mastering so that your song can compete with platinum-selling artists in the world, right? Because that's what your goal is. You want to compete with them. So try to get your sound as close to that level as possible. I hope.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, you know, obviously we're in this time now where a lot of artists, like, there's nowadays more and more in the morning, like, artists kind of blow up on social media first before they get picked up. So there's a lot of talented people that never get seen until you kind of, you know, there's a lot of artists that have kind of come up through TikTok or come up through, you know, just making samples online. And I wonder what you think about the influence of social media on like the discovery of artists right now.
I think it's great, honestly. And it's one of the things that I'm considering, because there's really many pathways that you can take. And I think back in the day, there was only one pathway.
Yeah.
where it was like you met someone in a label, they thought you were talented, they developed you as an artist, and then boom, you're a platinum selling artist. But now what's happening is artists are developing themselves, right? And the cool thing about it is I think it gives you a lot more freedom and opportunities to experiment with yourself and create sounds that you might have not necessarily have done if you went the traditional route. One of the reasons, I'll go back to one of my favorite artists, Jay-Z. One of the reasons why I really like his story is because, you know, in his come up story, he was going door to door to different labels, trying to see if he could get signed as an artist. And he got rejected by every single label. So what he decided to do was to make his own label, right? Make his own label, record his own songs. And he got a distribution deal with like a smaller indie label, but he basically and effectively did everything himself, right? And then after he blew up, he got a partnership with Def Jam. And that's kind of, I see the spirit of that in what I'm seeing on social media now, like especially on TikTok, with people just deciding, hey, I'm not going to go the traditional route and try to beg for a deal from a label and sign a slave contract.
Right.
I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to blow up on TikTok. I'm going to release consistently and I'm going to improve my artistry as I'm doing this. And then when the labels approach me, I'll now be in the power position because I already have a fan base and I can demand certain things in my contract because they're looking for me and I'm not looking for them. So to answer your question, I definitely think that I like it. I like the fact that artists are blowing up on TikTok, on Instagram, because I think it gives us a lot more freedom and it provides us with more leverage as well.
Right. So sticking to the, just sticking a bit to social media still, how do you feel like the business of music has changed?
Oh, I think the business of music has changed in the sense of, I don't think radio is as important anymore. I think the internet has become the new radio. You know how they said that, you know how they said that it was like TV killed radio, but now I think like social media killed TV. I think that definitely what labels are looking at is like, how are we going to get this song to pop on TikTok so that it can be played on TikTok and we can make revenue from streaming and ad placements on online. So I think that that's how it's changed the music business. It's not so much so about like getting your song on the radio or TV placements anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely about advertisements on social media, getting the song as widespread across the world as possible and just trying to up your streaming numbers as much as possible.
Right. So obviously, you know, there's a type of song that will kind of pop on a TikTok.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about how you would kind of put words to that. How is the way people make music changed because of that, because of the social media influence?
It's changed significantly. I mean, I think the way that people were when they were creating songs for the public in the past, people were thinking about, oh, this song would be perfect for this situation. If someone was just going through a situation or wanting to reflect on a situation, you would create a song that you would think would be fitting to be in that environment. Mm-hmm. Now what you're trying to do is I call it kind of like microwave music. You're trying to create basically a snippet that is as catchy as possible. And like you just need one part of the song stick out and be like, this is the part that they're going to play on TikTok.
Yeah.
And that everyone's going to just put on their videos repeatedly. So I think that's how it's changed, is that instead of people looking at the song as a whole, they're looking at finding a specific part of the song that can be used in like a 15 to 30 second video.
So as an artist trying to navigate that world, the world of algorithms, the world of 30 second attention spans, what's your strategy? Well, as you're putting out music in a different environment,
I try to maintain a level of balance, you know, because I try to stay true to my roots and my origins, because I know that there's also a market for that out there. But then I also try to not have this attitude, because there's some people who have this attitude where they kind of look down on everything that's new.
Right.
And I try to be like, I don't want to look down on it. Let me try to see how I can work within it and use it to my benefit. So I try my best to be as balanced as possible. And I'll admit, sometimes I make a song thinking, hey, maybe I will go down the direction of trying to make this song something that could be used on TikTok, like, and try to make it as short as possible, try to not have too much of an intro. Like, there's facts that people look up where they're like, oh, they say now that, you know, the song has to have a hook within the first 15 seconds. Otherwise people lose attention, you know? Yeah. So like there's those things that do stay very much so apparent in the forefront of my mind. And when I'm trying to create a song that I think that I want to use for TikTok, I keep those things in my mind and I do research on like algorithms and the correct hashtags to use and what time to post something on and all of those things. But what I'm saying is while doing that, I simultaneously still make my songs that are still true to why I wanted to do this to begin with.
Okay. So obviously, as you said, you've been at this for a while.
Yeah.
You're not a new kid on the block in that sense.
Right.
What would you call your biggest success so far? Because I know you've had some success and I don't want to downplay that. I won't hear that. So give me some of your highlights.
Oh, definitely. The first one would be hosting my own showcase here in Vancouver with Uncovered Vancouver. That was such a success. We got so many sponsors, so many artists performing, and we had like a live stream. There was like over 1,000 people who were watching.
Right.
And then we also sold out the Red Room Club for our follow-up show. So that was really nice. I'm opening up for Obi Trice and D12 in March. So I'm very excited about that. So on March 27th, I'm opening up for D12 and Obi Trice. That's going to be like my biggest show ever. It's going to be at the Hollywood Theater and that's going to be sold out. So I'm excited for that. And I'm just excited for meeting more people in the industry and potentially getting a tour out of that and just experiencing what a tour would be like. Some other milestones would probably be my song, No Lies, hitting over 100,000 streams across all platforms and also getting placed on the Gary V playlist for that song.
Yeah. Oh, man's on the big time now. You're on the Gary V.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
No, that's wild, man. I celebrate you, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
That's some good success. So, you know, there's obviously, I'm sure you'll tell me that there have been some missed opportunities along the line. So what would you say is kind of you would consider the biggest opportunity that you see you missed?
The biggest opportunity that I missed. I have to really think about this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's always like you never know how big an opportunity is until you see like the results of all this could have been.
Right.
But I think there was a time where...
Or maybe not necessarily or something you chose to forgo because you felt like it wasn't right for you.
There was a time where I had the opportunity to potentially get connected with people. Do you know Colors?
No, I do not.
So it's a YouTube channel where like a lot of artists like perform. It's kind of like a different version of Tiny Desk.
Yeah, I know Tiny Desk.
Yes. So it's kind of like a different version of Tiny Desk. It's also very popular. It's called Colors. And I had an opportunity to connect with someone who ran that media organization and would have given me an opportunity to perform.
Right.
But I decided not to go down that path because at the time I didn't feel like I was completely ready.
Oh,
but I do regret missing out on that because I feel like that would have been something great to add to my resume. And honestly, it probably would have given me the opportunity to get exposed to certain players in the industry and might have given me an opportunity to perform on tours and such. But actually, now that I'm thinking about it, the real one is I remember I was recording a 2-track one day and the thing about 2-track studios is that a lot of people in the industry come through there. And we actually met the head of SoundCloud Creative Direction.
Oh.
And he gave me his Instagram.
Oh.
And that's the, and I wish I would have kept that connection there because I think I lost his contact. But that's one of the ones that I really miss because he was shooting a documentary at 2-track studios.
Right.
And he was talking about how they were going to go on tour and they were signing people and such at that time.
Right.
They were signing them to SoundCloud, but you know, SoundCloud had a stigma around it. And I guess maybe at that time I didn't want to be associated with that, but
right.
When I look back at it, that would have been a pretty big opportunity.
Oh, you kind of alluded to this, like, oh, what stigma was there around SoundCloud?
people, like when you tell someone like I'm a SoundCloud rapper, it's just like it's a negative stigma.
Oh, I see. I remember that now. Like people look down on people like SoundCloud is like
the needs, right? Exactly. Yeah. But you know, when I think about it, like I was caring too much about the perception and everything, because really, at the end of the day, it would have been a really brilliant opportunity to maybe get signed for a couple of years and have a good backing behind me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, at this point in your career, what are your aspirations? Where do you want to take your music?
Mm-hmm. I want to create a body of work that, because I created my EP and a lot of people enjoyed it, right? But I want to create a body of work that will be, I want to say, critically acclaimed, right? Like when I'm talking about, I'm working on an album right now, this is an album that I want to submit to the Juno Awards.
Ooh.
You know, like that's kind of the target that I want to try to hit.
Yeah.
Like I want to make music that I can submit to the Juno Awards, music that can get reviewed by the bigger news organizations in Canada. And that's kind of what, where my next target is. Yeah. On the dream board, that's the next level that I want to try to reach.
No, I mean, why not? Right. It's totally, it's totally achievable. And in terms of your identity and the evolution of your music, when someone hears your song,
yeah,
what do you want them to associate with your sound?
What I want you to associate with my sound is authenticity. And I know that sounds very cliche, but to kind of delve deeper into what I mean by that is, whatever song it's listening to, I want you, when you're listening to it, to believe that this is what I really feel like in the moment, right? I'm being completely honest with you as far as like what I'm feeling in the moment, what my view of the world is and what my view of the situation is. If I'm upset, happy, whatever the scenario is, I just want you to believe that I'm being honest and I'm telling you 100% the truth from my perspective, the way I see it, right? And what I mean by that is, like, oftentimes I was talking to my sister and we were talking about a particular artist. I won't mention names because I don't want to burn bridges for the future.
You don't want to catch any strings.
Yeah, I don't want to catch. But like, she was talking about a particular artist and she was saying that when she listens to this artist's music, it feels very soulless, right? It feels very like, you know, something you would hear in a mall and it's just like
elevator music.
Elevator music, right? I want to be the opposite of that, basically, right? I want to be something that when you listen to it, you're like, wow, I can, like, he's being very genuine. Like, it's a raw emotion that I'm connecting to.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was saying about me feeling like rap is dead.
Mm.
Rap is not what it used to be in terms of as a vehicle for just conveying emotion and as a vehicle for kind of just saying how you feel it. Right. So in terms of where there's obviously negative associations with rap in the sense that there's a promotion or a perception that rap promotes violence and promotes, you know, a certain lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And basically a lot of people kind of link that to problems within the African American society
community,
where, you know, there's a lot of like some black on black violence.
Mm.
There's a lot of like crime sometimes. There's a lot of like, you know, gang violence, drugs and stuff like that. And some typically tend to describe that to associate that with the kind of music that we produce.
Right.
So I'm curious what your take on that is.
I think the sociological term, and I might be incorrect in saying this, is like, I think it's called like black exploitation, basically.
Yeah.
I forget the term, what the term was. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking about like how we feel like, you know, rap has kind of turned into like a modern day minstrel show, I can definitely, I see where that sentiment is coming from and agree with that in a sense of like, I think J. Cole said it, like, you know, you want the song to sound like this because you think that's what it feels like to be black, right? Basically saying that people associate rap music with the negative attributes of the stereotypes that they have of the black community. Whether it be in America, Canada, or anywhere else in the West or anywhere else in the world, generally speaking. So I agree. I can see that. I think that that's one of the negative things that's happened in recent times with hip hop. I think it's always existed, but I think it's gotten worse now, is that people are thinking that, you know, rap is showcasing what the Black community is. It's just about money and, you know, holes and, you know, what type of cars you drive, what type of jewelry you wear on. And that as Black people, we're so one dimensional and we don't have any layers or complexities as individuals.
Yeah.
So I can see that. And I think that is a problem. And that's definitely something that is motivating for me in my music to kind of showcase that as Black people, we do have nuance in who we are as individuals.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. And, you know, that showing that there is complexity to the Black story.
Yeah.
And, you know, a bit more nuance to what people, the experience of people in terms of the Black experience is important. And as a person, for example, I mentioned I grew up in Nigeria earlier. And one of the biggest things I saw a lot of times was listening to the news was the only thing you would see in the news is just poor African kids dying of hunger.
Yeah.
And for me, that always annoyed me because it was like, well, there's more to these people than hungry mouths needing to be fed.
Right.
Or dying of disease. Right. So that importance that more stories, more Black stories is told, I think is a very important hole that I think that, oh, sorry, go on.
You said something really important, right?
Yeah.
Because what you described there really, I think, is a form of dehumanization that people don't understand, is you're almost making that person like a caricature, right? You're saying that, oh, this person, I'm going to put this person in a box of poor and hungry, and that's going to be their identity, right? It's not like, oh, well, this person has a family, they have interests, they have desires, they have life goals, they have different aspects to them. Sure, they're in a situation right now where they might be poor and they might be hungry, but that doesn't encompass who they are as a person overall.
Yeah.
So I definitely resonate with what you just said there.
Yeah. Anyways, as we kind of round up, I thought I'd throw a few questions at you.
All right, cool. Yeah.
So if you were assembling your band of Avengers, a musical lineup that to rival anything that, the outer universe, the aliens can throw at us.
Yeah.
What would be your Avenger? Who would be your Avenger?
Like, let's say if I was making like a rap group, right?
Yeah.
The rappers I would have in there, I gotta have Tupac, just like the energy and the message that he had.
Yeah.
And just like when you hear his voice, he's just so powerful and the passion he has in his voice.
Right.
I'm gonna put Nas in there as well too, because we're gonna need someone who's strong with the pen. You know what I mean?
Let's go.
He's gonna need to put down the good. How many members can I have in this?
Okay, let's just say you got five.
Five? Okay, so we got Tupac, we got Nas. Next one's going to be obvious, Jay-Z.
Fair.
Idol. And I think he's one of the most underrated lyricists. I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah.
We're going to get Lauryn Hill in there.
Lauryn Hill?
We're going to need
someone. Where are we going with this?
We're going to need someone on the hooks, man. She's one of the only rap artists, by the way, to win Album of the Year, period, at the Grammys. So. We're going to need someone on the hooks, and she's also good bars as well.
Yeah.
And the fifth member, and, you know, this is one of my it's an obvious one, but I saved the best for last, which would be Biggie. Rest in peace to Biggie, but, you know.
You've definitely got a type. That is what I'll put it as. You left out
the golden era of rap.
Yeah, no. Anytime someone makes a list, there's always be somebody that is mad at it. And I'm mad at it right now because you left out Lil Wayne, you left out Eminem, you left out who else?
I left out mad people, right?
Oh my
God. When I put in Lauryn Hill, I remember to put in Lauryn Hill.
Like, why would you put in Lauryn Hill? No. I would sooner put in Meg Thee Stallion before I put in Lauryn Hill. What is this?
You're going to get so many people mad at you, bro.
I know.
That's so funny.
No, but yeah, no, that's fine. No, that's a squad right there. That's a good.
No, we would come back and we would dominate and get all these TikTokers out of the out of the charts.
Yeah. So if you were doing like a straight shooter between, let me see, if you were doing a straight fight between Kendrick and Lil Wayne, who would win?
That's going to be tough. That's actually going to be very tough. I love Kendrick so much, but I feel like if we're doing like a rap battle, I feel like just the way that Wayne raps, I think Wayne would probably win. Mm-hmm. Just with the way that Wayne raps, right? Because Kendrick is a highly skilled lyricist.
Yeah.
But like his bars are more so like introspective, right?
Yeah, you Whereas
Wayne can kill you with the punchlines.
Yes.
And they're punchlines that are very apparent. Like you don't have to think about it, right?
Yeah.
So I think in that setting, Wayne would probably take it home.
Yep. Okay. So let's take it even. I'm about to scandalize.
Oh shit!
Now, if you were doing, three of the modern day female lyricists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put Nicki Minaj. You got Cardi B. I don't know if Meg Thee Stallion can stand at the same level as them, but
let's put her in there. She's definitely doing her thing now. Yeah. She won 3 Grammys. She's really making a come up. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you had to set up those three in a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you when I said scandalized. I know the question. No, that's not the kind. That's not the question I'm trying to ask you.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
Which of them would you say is the best rapper?
Okay. I'm going to say Nicki Minaj.
What?
I felt, you know.
What am I hearing?
I'm going to say Nicki Minaj, honestly.
Why?
You know, I think in recent times now she's kind of getting some slack, but I think Nicki is really underrated for her lyrics. Okay. And just her flow. And the cadence she uses and the characters that she comes up with too. Like Roman, like she's very creative with her writing stuff.
Right.
And I think the complexities and the pinnacles she's reached as an artist, I don't feel like I have felt that from Cardi or Megan Thee Stallion yet.
Ooh.
I will say, I think Megan Thee Stallion is doing a fantastic job. And I think she's getting kind of closer to that level of Nicki, but I think it's undisputable that Nicki is still the best female rapper.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a hot take.
Yeah.
That's a hot take. So in terms of like up and coming to a point level, mm-hmm, of artists, which rappers are you looking at now and going, ooh, that's next up?
Next up? Definitely.
Obviously, apart from you.
Yeah. No. Like, yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of people call him an industry plant, but I'm really interested to see what Baby Keem will do in the near future. I really liked his Family Ties song with Kendrick.
Yeah.
I already mentioned JID. I know he's kind of a little bit more established now at this point.
Yeah.
But I think that he still has a lot of room to even grow further.
Right.
And really just like dominate the industry. Okay. Kind of like be the new Kendrick type role. So those two people I'm very much so interested in right now. Not really a rapper per se, and he's been at it for a long time, but JPEG Mafia, I just love the experimental aspects of his music. And he produced a lot on like the recent Kanye album that dropped.
Right.
So I think that it's giving him kind of like the platform now to really just elevate to a level he hasn't yet.
Yeah.
So those are the three people at the forefront of my mind.
So,
right now.
So sprinkle a female MC in there.
A female MC in there?
Yeah, for a few. Sprinkle up.
I don't think you're going to like this answer.
You're going to say Ice Spice, aren't you? Don't do that.
No, I'm going to say Sexy Red.
I am done. What? Like, why?
No.
Why?
Her music, right?
Yeah.
Say what you want to say about her music, but if we're talking about who I foresee coming up and kind of dominating the industry.
Yeah.
Like, her fan base is, she's already getting like a very loyal fan base.
Right.
And they really like her music. And her music is catchy. I'm not even going to lie.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to hold you on that one. So.
Okay. So, I mean, this, if you answer yes to this question, I'm literally.
Interview over. Camera thrown away.
Camera thrown away. I'm breaking the microphones. Are you a Swiftie, my guy? Are you a Swiftie?
No, I'm not a Swiftie.
Oh, my God. Oh, that was a dangerous point we got to there, brother. We got to a very dangerous point in this conversation. Yeah. I was scared.
Yeah.
I was like, if you told me you were a Swiftie, you would have broken my heart. Yeah. No, it's all good.
I also want to mention another artist. Not a hip-hop artist, actually an Afrobeats artist.
Yeah.
But Ashake, definitely. Oh, okay. I think he's coming up really, like, I think he's, the type of music that he's making is nothing that I've ever heard before.
Yeah.
Coming out of Africa, like the way that he's blending, because people think it's just Afro beats, but he's also blending different genres as well.
Yeah.
He's putting Amapiano in there. He's putting like traditional Nigerian gospel music in there as well too.
Yeah.
And he's making it something new. So
shout out Ashake. That guy's my countryman.
Yeah, exactly.
No, there's a lot of
There's so many artists coming out of Nigeria right now. Yeah. You know, and Afrobeat is really, and Amapiano, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's at a point right now where the world is.
African music is on the come up for sure.
Yeah.
Like, even you saw at the Grammys, I think Tyla won the Grammy for Water. Yeah. Should have went to DeVito, but it is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Among some of the scandals this year, I don't understand what's going on in this world.
No, but, yo, full respect to Tyla, honestly.
Yeah.
They both deserved it. Yeah. You know, but music is subjective, so we can make our opinions, you know?
He said it, I didn't. Anyways, so, you know, as we round up.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a run, my guy.
It's been an up and down journey for
you. Yeah. You know, coming from where you did to the point where you are right now, you know, trying to find your way around and, you know, having some success, which, you know, that's not bad. You always want those moments of clarity, right?
Yeah.
And seeing where your future goes, what would you say is the soundtrack of your life?
Mm-hmm. Like, if I could pick an album.
Yeah, if you could pick an album that defines your journey, what would that
be? Let me see. Oh, there's so many good albums. Honestly, right now, this is just an answer for right now, but I don't know if you know the album Black on Both Sides by Mos Def.
Oh, no, I don't know that one.
Check it out. That album out. It came out, I think, in 99.
Yeah. So what was it about the composition of that album that would you say best? Like, maybe if you could pick songs that you say define different.
Hip hop went from selling crack to smoking it. Medicine for loneliness and feeling like felonious and dizzy. That's what it is, bro.
Man, low key just dropped it.
That's my favorite.
Okay.
That's my favorite song on that album, Hip Hop. The song is literally called Hip Hop. And it's talking about the elevation of hip hop and the progression of hip hop and everything.
Yeah.
But the entire album, Black on Both Sides, what he was hating on that album.
Yeah.
Still resonates to this day.
Right.
I feel like, okay, I like it even more than I like Illmatic. I'm going to be completely honest with you, bro. Like,
man's just full of hot takes.
Like, the album is just a masterpiece, and the story and the journey and how it relates to my journey and what he was saying about just coming up as a young boy in Brooklyn, witnessing a lot of violence and finding hip hop as a way to find his identity is something that I resonate with. When I look at my story, right? Not necessarily parallel, but there's similarities in the sense that I came from a difficult situation, was searching for something to identify myself with, to feel like I can relate to something with. And that was through hip hop music. And that's the overall message of that album as well. So
I think that's
why I call it the soundtrack to my life. Yeah.
You know what? That's a good point to end this interview.
All right.
Thank you so much for, you know, talking to me today. You've given me your time generously.
Yep.
And of coming to your space here and had this amazing conversation with you.
Yep.
So thank you for your insights. I don't like your hot takes on music, by the way, but it's all good. So thank you, man, for doing this.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that, bro.
Take care.
Peace out, y'all.